everyone. Welcome back to PS I'm Single. It's your girl, Trish. Today's episode is the adult lifestyle. We're going to talk about kind of a controversial career path that some people take. And today I have Fred joining me. Hey, Fred.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming.
So, you're welcome.
Fred, can you tell us what your former profession was?
Yes. So for about 2.5 years, I was one of the best known gay porn stars on the planet.
You said the best known.
One of the best known.
Oh, yes. You were number one.
I'd like to think so, but no, there are a lot of us. They were very popular at the time.
So how did you get into the porn industry?
Well, for me, there was, I'll go back in time. So I had been a musician and, and a triple threat actor, singer, dancer, and all the casting agents had said, oh, you're great, but come back when you're like 50, you'll get lots of work, you're more leading man, you know, material. So I started pursuing a music career as a singer, and I was over 19, and none of the major labels were interested in signing anyone. So I started working on my music, doing a lot of demos. And back then, it wasn't like it was today. So you actually needed to be paying like about $100 an hour to be in a studio to be producing demos.
Wow.
So I started go-go dancing in clubs. And there was a very famous porn director who showed up at one of the clubs one night, and the owner of a porn studio. And they sat down next to me after I did a set. And they were like, you were made to do porn. You need to do porn. I was like, well, no, it'll ruin my career. So you fast forward many years. And finally, I was like, well, if I had a career for it to ruin, that would be a good thing. And so from there, I just decided, you know, there at the time, there were a lot of, you know, the porn magazines were still out there.
Okay.
And there was an avenue to start building a fan base within the gay community and utilize doing porn for some other purpose. Most people that I knew when I was doing this, they were plucked from obscurity, became big stars, very well known in the gay community. There were only certain amounts of magazines per city that were local gay magazines and rags, and then the main, you know, 5 or 6 gay porn magazines. So everyone back then, all the gay men would always go to the gay card shop every month and go into the magazine section and look at the nudie pictures of the hottest porn stars. So there was always that access to having press going on about you that was going around the world with those magazines. And this is before blogging or
Instagram.
Way back in the day. Wasn't even twinkle in a person's eye back then. So that's when I started. It was to build something so that they would have something else to talk about other than, oh, it's a hot guy or the big dick or pretty face or whatever, what they'd always talk about with featuring porn models in magazines. It would be, oh, and he also does something else.
Right.
So that's why I did it and why I got into it. You know, the downfall with most of the guys that I knew doing gay porn was that they were plucked from obscurity and then had this moment where all of a sudden overnight they were being booked, you know, at all the gay clubs and bars across the country and the world, and fans were lining up for your autograph, and you have this sudden being famous in the gay world. They call it being gamous. And then there's a shelf life of about 2 to 2.5 years with any or most 90% of porn stars
really
are gone after about 2.5 years because the studio feels like, well, you've oversaturated the market if you've done more than just a handful of films.
Okay.
And so you're not so in demand. They always want somebody younger, prettier, hotter, and there's always new meat coming along. So the problem with most gay men who get into porn thinking, oh, it'll do something for me, if they're not smart during that window period, then ultimately they are no longer being asked to be in films. They're not being booked. And they go back into obscurity, and it messes with the majority of them, which is very understandable. It's like suddenly becoming very famous, and then all of a sudden, nobody wants you anymore.
Right. It's like you fell off the earth.
Yeah, and you're 25 years old, and you've peaked. And that feeling is very disturbing. So thankfully, I was a little bit older than that when I was doing this and a little bit more grounded, and I was not into the party scene or any of that. I was, you know, doing this as work. And so that's how I started and got into it. I just decided, okay, one day, today's the day, and I sent pictures and online. And 4 hours later, the owners of one of the biggest gay studios reached out to me and booked me for 6 days later to be shooting in San Luis, Luis Obispo, California, doing my first shoot.
Really? Can you take us back to your first shoot? What was that like? Were you nervous?
Yes, I was terrified. You know, I ended up, because they were cheap, they flew me from New York to San Luis Obispo through four different cities, and it took like 16 hours to get to California. So I was exhausted by the time I got there. And then, I went on set, and there were all these hot guys that were scantily clad running around. And it was unlike any other experience that I had, because it was truly being shot on location somewhere on this ranch.
Oh.
And so it was, they housed all of us in this huge room with like 15 queen-size beds. Everybody had their own bed, but there were no curtains separating anything. So it was like this big sort of camp out with some incredibly hot guys and, and some who were a little spent from working that day.
Okay.
Others who were a little randy because they were going to be working the next day. And, you know, but they had a cookout and it was just, but it was terrifying. You know, you show up and the first thing that they say is, okay, well, get naked. Let's see your body, you know?
Really?
And so it felt a little off-putting and kind of like, oh, okay. You know,
I can only imagine as just like a regular, normal person. But then you were doing the go-go dancing, but that's completely different from showing up and someone telling you to get naked.
Yeah. And then actually analyzing your body, saying, turn around, bend over. Let's, I'm sure that there are a lot of models who have gotten bad fake big tans and have horrible tan lines. And this happens a lot in the industry, that they think, oh, I'll get it. You know, I'll go to the tanning salon. And they don't realize, if you want me to be graphic, that you need to spread your behind, because otherwise you have this very distinct white mark between your butt cheeks.
Spread the cheeks.
So like things like that, they're like, well, makeup, you know.
In between the cheeks?
Oh, they will do everything. I mean, a lot of these guys, unfortunately, in gay porn have done a ton of steroids, and so their complexions are not very pretty. And especially when you're shooting in HD and you're doing close-ups on body parts. So there at times, depending on the model, there is a lot of body makeup that goes on. I learned from my go-go boy days that you just literally slather yourself with Johnson & Johnson's baby oil.
And the
glistening effect. And then you towel it off just a little bit so it's not too shiny.
Right.
And you kind of pop. So that's the only makeup really that I ever needed to do, thankfully.
Was it hard for you to get hard? You like that? Like your first scene.
You know, okay, so here's what was really strange was that the very first time that I did this after saying no for so long, we started filming. We actually did some B-roll first, where we were doing some really idiotic dialogue.
Okay.
I was walking in the woods and came upon this guy, and, you know, it was really bad acting on the other guy's part. He was great. We became very good friends for a while afterward, but it was just, you know, he was Hungarian and had a very thick accent, and they kept saying, okay, you have to say it's cold, and he kept saying it's cold. So that became our running joke for the rest of our friendship, of like, you know, what's the temperature outside? Oh, it's cold. But we did that, and then we started, you know, everything always starts with making out a bit, depending on, or sometimes companies don't want the guys to do that. They just want to get right to oral and then anal. It's very formulaic in working with a production company in gay porn. Things are so different nowadays because so much is online. So much looks very homemade with an iPhone.
Right.
But, you know, if you're working with an actual big company, most of them are very formulaic, that, you know, you'll make out, you'll start undressing one another. And then there's something called magic clothes. Do you know what that is?
Magic clothes?
Magic clothes is when they suddenly disappear. And from one camera angle to the next, poof, they're gone. And so suddenly you're naked. And then they always do oral.
Okay.
And then they're usually three fucking positions.
Okay.
So that's how most, you know, highly produced gay porn is made. And then the money shot.
So technically speaking, from beginning to end, about how long can one scene take?
12 to 14 hours.
Oh, okay. Goodbye. What?
Mostly, yeah. Yeah, and a lot of people don't realize that. So the thing is, I was lucky that I'm an exhibitionist and the wind can blow and I'm like, wee! But when you're on a shoot that long,
right?
And what happens very rapidly is that no matter how hot the person is that you're paired with,
right?
you lose sexual interest in them by hour six. It's no longer hot at all. And, you know, what they'll do is, particularly when it comes to penetration, is that they will do some very intense pounding, you know, like they'll say, okay, like really go at it, you know? And then they yell at you the entire time, and all porn, all professional porn is overdubbed. So at the very end of the 12 or 14 hour day shoot, they typically would have you be there on set so that the Nat sound sounds similar. And they would put the camera against a wall so they're not filming anything. But what they were getting was us doing,
Really?
And then slurping sounds like we're blowing each other, and then the slapping of fucking and all of this stuff. So it's all overdubbed because the entire time that you're going at it, from oral to anal to everything, the director just yells at you the entire time. And one particular studio, the owner of the studio slash director would like to film in a studio, not outdoors. So he liked to be on a microphone through speakers with the entire studio black except the lights on the action. So it was like the voice of God echoing through the studio that had 25-foot ceilings saying, you know, faster, faster, slower, slower, move your hand, move your hand, move your hand, move your hand. So that's how porn is made. But this is why, you know, with it being that technical, and if you're good and you rise to the top, pardon the pun, because once you've done porn, everything is a pun. But once you're in that environment, it becomes a performance. The people who rise to the top are actually really good at giving a performance to make it look hot.
Right.
Make it look like they have the energy, that they're really into it. And that's what would separate a porn personality from a porn star.
I feel like I wouldn't even be able to enjoy it. Like, the fact that you're there from 12 to 13 hours and someone's yelling at you, like, screaming out directions. So it's like a whole voiceover that happens when you're listening to the moaning and all of that.
Yes, it's everything is overdubbed. Everything is overdubbed. But what's difficult is that, you know, when it comes to the penetration section, like I was saying, you will pound really hard for 4 or 5 minutes, you know? And then they'll stop, and they'll take 45 minutes to reset the camera, reset the lights, reset everything. People take breaks, and then they're like, okay, now shove it back in and keep going.
So you're just supposed to stay hard that whole time?
I would. I would keep fluffing myself, so I was basically hard for 12 to 14 hours a day shooting.
How does that work, though? It didn't make you dizzy? It didn't make, like, how does that work?
Yes, because it's so enormous that all the blood would rush there and I would just pass out. I'm blessed that way, but it's not 20 inches. I would just fluff. I would stay semi.
What's the fluff?
I'm sorry?
What's fluff?
Just touching yourself.
Okay.
You know.
For 12, I don't know. Yeah. I think after hour one, I'm like, all right, I got to go. Like, cameras off, lights off, like, I'm going home. I don't know if I would be able to do that.
It's not easy. And they don't always treat you very well. Most of the companies that I worked with, they were very unkind. There were a few definite exceptions, including that porn director who sat next to me 10 years prior to me starting. She eventually cast me in a movie where it was my very first box cover. And because I was not an exclusive with that studio, it was kind of a big deal that they put me on the cover. And so people were very mad that a non-exclusive was being put on the cover. But it was this drag queen, Shishi LaRue, is very kind, very loving, and a very supportive person. But a lot of other directors, and especially the production staff, depending on the production, they were not. They really treated you like a piece of meat. You were not a human being. You were just something to fill in and film and get out. And they didn't care if you were into it. You know, there were a lot of guys that would have erectile problems, understandably, because they were not performers.
Right.
They thought they were gorgeous guys, but they were like, oh, this will be hot to do, not realizing that it's not. And, you know, in the gay world, unfortunately, some of the biggest, most steroided, some of the most beautiful guys, when they open their mouth, the purse drops out. And for many gay men, that's a turnoff. So I have always cautioned any gay man who watches any of my porn or anyone else's porn, just like, you know, back in the day when it was on DVD, it was like, never watch the DVD extras, because the guy was like, oh, oh, and the director yells cut. And they're like, oh my God. Oh my God, I need a fresca. You know, and you're just like, ugh. And everyone on set, if it's more than one person, everyone's like, with their erections. So, yeah.
So how do they vet the other people who they're casting for these videos?
Oh, what do you mean? In what way?
Like, say I want to become a porn star or mm-hmm. join the adult industry. What's the vetting process? Like, if I send pictures of myself and they say, hey, yeah, you're in, is that it?
I can only speak to the gay world because that's my experience.
Okay.
In the gay world, there were some casting directors that would call you into their offices and let's just say hashtag me too,
which sounds
ridiculous because it's porn, it's sex, but they would force you to have sex with them and put it under the umbrella of, well, I need to see how well you perform.
Wow.
And that happened to me multiple times.
Wow.
But I also had my eye on a goal and said, okay, I will do this, you know, but I know that the working with this company is going to get me an enormous amount of press. It's going to further my career. And it was very Machiavellian of me, but I did it. You know, and you had no choice because if you said no, then you, of course, were never going to be cast by that company.
Right.
And the most ironic thing is how once I got to know the owners and there was this whole code of silence that if the owners actually knew what was really going on, they would have fired that casting director in a second.
So the owners don't know.
The owners were blissfully unaware.
Wow.
And it wasn't every studio, but several of the major ones that I worked with. And there were only a handful at the time. It was bad.
Wow. So when you get casted for a scene, mm-hmm. are you aware who the person is, who the other person is going to be, or is it like you show up to the set and then that's when you meet them?
Thankfully, sometimes that happens, but thankfully I was always sent pictures ahead of time. But you had no choice.
Right.
So. I did 16 movies, and in that time, I would say probably about two of the 16, I actually was able to choose my scene partner.
Okay.
From a pool of people that they're like, hey, who would you like, you know? And that was only because I was becoming a much bigger star in the industry.
Right.
So I was able to kind of leverage that and say, you know, I would like to actually be with somebody that I'm attracted to.
Right.
You find things about people that you find hot. So it was keying into that, but it was also a performance. You know, as long as they were at least passable and not like a troll, you know, then I was good, you know? Because it's like, if you live under a bridge, if you've never seen the inside of a gym. But of course, they wouldn't cast anyone who isn't in good shape, you know?
Okay.
And the mantra in the gay porn industry, at least, is that you have to have two out of the three. You have to have either the body, face, or dick.
Okay.
So you need two of those in order to actually be successful or employable.
So
But you need to be in at least decent shape, you know?
Okay.
But there are guys who probably could use going to the gym a little bit more, but they have a 14-inch penis, and it's like, oh, okay, well, you know, there's that.
14 inches. Yeah. So can I ask, are you a giver or a taker?
I'm like Gypsy Rose Lee. I'm very versatile.
Okay.
So let me entertain you. No, I mean, I did both in my personal life and on film. So just the problem is when you're bottoming, there's a lot more prep work for 2 days where you don't eat. And there's
right.
a whole formula to it. So
So I heard, I was listening to something else. It was another podcast. And they were saying, like, the preparatory work for anal, like, you have to use, like, an enema and everything. Like,
oh, that's the beginning of it.
Really?
So you basically don't eat the day before the shoot.
Oh,
at
wow.
all. And the day prior to that, you don't have, like, much meat. I mean, this is for people who really are going to do it right.
Okay.
Because there have been a lot of problems on set, let's just say.
That's what I was about
to
say.
I only experienced when I was topping only once that there was a little issue, and thankfully that was cleared up rapidly. But no, you know, the worst thing that you can imagine is you're doing anal.
Right.
And you personally are dirty. in front of 12 people on set.
Ugh.
Okay, so that would be the easiest thing to motivate me to, like, okay, 2 days before, no meat or anything. Because you know that your body sometimes, depending on the meat, can take 36 hours to process it and for it to go through your system. So you do that and then kind of just do like liquids the day before. And then you take an Imodium the night before you go to bed.
Okay.
So the night before the shoot, so that it would stop anything else from coming through.
Right.
And then it's a very involved process of douching the morning of.
Really?
Well.
And this is only for the shoot, or you do this like in real life?
Well, this is for the shoot. The thing is, you have to consider that if you're bottoming, you could be getting pounded very hard for 5, 10, maybe even 15 minutes, and then you stop for 45 minutes, and then you get pounded again.
Ugh.
And again, and this keeps happening for 10 hours.
Oh, man.
And as food moves through your system.
Yeah.
You know, so this is why for a shoot, you need to be prepared like this. And the best story that I ever heard, which actually happened on the set of a movie that I had done, but it happened a few days before I got there to shoot my part.
Okay.
There was a very inexperienced bottom, one of the gay for pay straight guys who'd never bottomed. And the guys on set were like, oh, well, here are some Fleet enemas. You know, here's three. Just, you know, use them.
Three.
And he didn't know what he was doing. He was straight. He'd never bottomed before. So he literally put all three up inside of him.
What?
And held it.
What?
He was so naive that he held it. And then when it came time for him to bottom, it was like going to a water park, apparently.
With
pretty
Muddy
water.
Waters.
Yeah. He was a great musician, wasn't he? Let's just put it in that perspective.
We call it Musla.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
So that actually happened, yes.
Oh,
yes.
Look, I just clenched my butt cheeks.
I just thought you were happy to see me.
I can't help it. I just clenched my butt cheeks together. Are you serious?
Yeah, no, I'm totally serious. I mean, there are a million stories that you can tell once you've been in the industry long enough. So.
Oh, my gosh. I can't imagine. Like, first of all, I've never tried anal. I don't know.
Well, you're missing out.
Am I? Listen. This is what I told someone. I said I felt like shit would just be falling out of my ass. Like, everywhere that I went, for some strange reason, I'm very regular.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like anal would make me more loose. I don't know.
No. The thing that's shocked me the most is that I've actually been with guys who are fisting bottoms, and it bounces back.
What do you mean? Like they get fisted?
They get fisted, yes.
How does that work? Do they put something on their arm while you're fisting? Or is it like a bare arm? Bare fist.
Some do that, especially now in the age of Truvada. You know, when I was doing porn back in the day, there was nothing. You know, if you were infected with HIV, there was, you know, there was the cocktail. I mean, don't get me wrong. We're not talking about the 80s or anything. I'm not that old. But but there was nothing to protect someone who's HIV negative. So, you know, fisting that would, especially that would be on camera with any of the big studios, they, of course, would use a glove.
Okay.
You know?
And then they edit the glove out?
No. I mean, you would see it on camera. I mean, they would use condoms for anal sex. So,
okay.
You know, it was the same kind of concept.
All right. So have you ever gotten shitted on ever shitted on someone while performing?
No. God forbid. No. Thank God. No, thank God.
You know what? I feel like preparing like that for a scene, okay, I get it. But like in just regular everyday life, are you always prepared to...
I was a Boy Scout. Thank you for getting that joke. Always be prepared for bottoming. You know, if you know that you're going to be intimate with somebody and you're thinking that you might, you know, be... in the reclining position, you prepare. You know, that's what gay men do.
I feel like that's too much preparation for me. I don't know. Like an enema.
Well, women douche, you know, to make themselves fresh. So it's the similar thing, just around the back door. So.
Well, I've never taken an enema, so this
You're
also explains
out.
Why I'm like... This also explains why I'm like, I don't know what happens.
You should give it a shot and let me know how it goes.
Yeah, I probably won't. Do your friends and family know about you being in the industry, or is this like...
Yes, I was very out too.
You were?
Yeah. I mean, you know, my sister knew, and, you know, all my friends, and, you know.
Were they accepting of it, or was it like, why would you?
Yeah, it was interesting, because at first when I came out to them about it, they understood why I was doing it.
Okay.
They got the possibility of having press. And then when they saw how rapidly my music career took off,
right.
Ironically from a connection that I made with another gay porn star who also was a musician and knew, you know, a producer that was a dance music producer, and that's what I was doing. You know, I got the connection that way, and that's what really began my music career.
Okay.
So, you know, I always liken it to that the universe kept bringing this into my path.
Right.
And I kept denying it, saying, no. And when I finally surrendered Dorothy'd and said, okay, the universe actually provided me with what I needed to move forward. And a lot of things opened up from this. Not just my legs, but I'm fine.
I was about to say them cheeks, what? Look.
Perfectly tanned. So, yeah.
Wow. So... do you regret doing it? I would think no, right? Because it
no,
helped you advance.
No, I don't.
Your
and
career.
I'm very, believe it or not, I'm actually very empowered about doing it.
Okay.
But it was in my past, you know. And what I'd like to say is that I think everybody deserves, no matter whether this was a choice to get into it,
right.
And then a choice to move on, or whether it was somebody who kind of fell into it and then got lost in it. I do believe that as human beings, everyone deserves a second act. And there are judgmental people out there, but I think things have changed so much. I mean, the fact that Stormy Daniels was awarded the key to the city of San Francisco by its mayor.
Wow.
I would like to say that the stigma surrounding people who've done porn, and also the glut of it that's online nowadays, that everyone's posting porn. It's kind of like,
that's
if you
true.
Haven't, you're kind of weird.
Yeah.
So I'd like to believe that society has evolved about this. I think what's great for what I have and what I've done is that when I'm 95 years old, I can be like, hey, Chippy, put on that porn when great-grandpa used to be hot. And mine will be perfectly lit, and it will look amazing with my baby oil.
Uh-oh.
And, you know, it's professionally produced as opposed to what you see mostly online of, you know, it's like kind of crappy production values. A lot of shadows. So,
what would you say... are some of the common misconceptions of an adult film star?
Well, if they're all whores. I've actually met a lot of guys who are amazing people. There's something that it takes to be that kind of sort of an exhibitionist and right. be putting it out there where you know that this is digital, this is forever that it will be out there.
Yeah.
And there's... not everyone, but a lot of the guys who I met were very grounded in their sexuality. They were very grounded in their sexual identity in the way that they were empowered to say, I'm a horned up guy and it's okay.
Right.
And it's fine to be this way. In fact, it's healthy to be this way. So I think that's a big misconception that people are ashamed of what they're doing. Those poor people, if they only found the light and, you know, got a real job, you know, but again, it's also not a job anymore. You
right.
know, when I was doing porn, the top porn stars that were exclusive with companies, they were making like $3,500 a scene. Some were just on salary for $35,000 a year with benefits with the companies.
Really?
They were making decent money. By the time I stopped doing porn, people were being offered $300 a scene. And I'm glad I did it when I did, because not that there was ever any like real money in it, but at least when you walk away with $2,000 or $3,000 from shooting a scene for 14 hours, you feel like I gave a great performance. I did a very good job. I know that people will enjoy the scene. And I got paid. I got
right.
paid something that was not just pennies on the dollar. And, nowadays, that's the big problem, is that because streaming and because all the, you know, porn hubs of the world and all the piracy, just like the music industry, there is no money to be made by these major studios anymore. So people are not going to be spending the $29.95 a month for an exclusive access to their website. People just don't do that.
Right.
And they're all struggling as bad as the major labels and indie labels went through in the music industry around the same time, ironically, when iTunes hit and the Virgin Megastores and Tower Records were closing up. Around that time, you know, porn was being pirated a lot more online, and all the porn stores started closing in New York City, at least. So,
$300 a scene.
Yes, and actually, that's good pay now for a scene.
Really?
Because one of my friends who had been making the top salary of $3,500, he lasted a little too long. He kept going back because he has a very specific look and he's a specific type.
Okay.
And he was able to string it out for almost 10 years of doing porn.
Wow.
But the last porn that he made about 2 years ago, the last scene that he did, he made like $250.
Oh.
So it was such a slap in the face to him. And yet he wrote it too long. Pardon the pun. Ha ha. He's a bottom, so there you go. Ba-dum-bum. So, yeah, it's
but you know how much you're making before you do the scene?
Yes.
Okay.
And you sign a contract and everything.
But, how do you tell someone, I want to watch you naked for 14 hours. By the way, I'm going to pay you $250.
Because people look at it, especially nowadays, that it's you know, back when I was doing it, it was a very kind of removed thing.
Right.
Only, like, people didn't know, how did you get hired by these or discovered by these studios?
Right.
You know, it was like a big deal. And now there are so many little mom and pop, that sounds weird to say, pop and pop gay porn studios, I should say, because I don't know much about the straight porn world when it comes to the business of it. I just never experienced that, but it's very similar to the gay porn world. But there's so many little studios and, you know, one man bands that does everything, and they get tons of guys that are like, hey, I'm horny. I've always fantasized about this. And they don't realize, you know, once they get into it, how awful it can be doing these shoots.
Aye, aye, aye.
If it's being done professionally.
So how often or frequent do they do like testing, like HIV,
well,
STD?
So what's interesting was that back in the day, they never, which they should have, but I never actually got tested prior to a scene.
Really? They didn't require you to come in?
Thankfully, I'm HIV negative, and I still am to this day. But back then, and most everything was being filmed in California, I only shot two videos in New York, New York State. But back then, all the major porn studios, they would only use condoms when it came to anal sex. So there, everyone was practicing safer sex.
Right.
Where there was no condom for oral, but condom for fucking. And so they looked at that as enough of a minimized risk that, you know, they might ask you, but they never forced you to go get tested and have your results.
Wow.
Which also always opened up any guys to other STDs, obviously.
Right.
Thank God I never contracted anything from any of my scene partners. But that is always an option. Nowadays, because of all these lawsuits and things that have happened, which you may have heard about in the news over the last 10 years, they actually, any major studio that is still in existence, they do make the models get tested. I think it's 2 weeks before, and then do a rapid test the day before the actual shoot.
Okay.
But what's also different nowadays is that more than half of those studios are producing bareback porn, and because of Truvada, and also the newer drugs for HIV that make it very almost impossible for an HIV positive person to pass the virus
pass
to someone who's negative. So because of those drugs, things are different, but yet they are at least taking these precautions.
Wow. So, all right. So what's one piece of advice that you would give someone who's looking to get into the industry?
I think I would say just work out so you look your best. Starve yourself so that you're really lean. One of the best pieces of advice that I got when I was first starting, because I'd kind of bulked up to get a little bit bigger before my first shoot, and the owner of the company took me aside when he was paying me after my shoot, and he said, "You're amazing. I think you're going to become a big star in this industry." But he said, "You need to get as lean as possible." And so I really did. And when I went back 2 months later to show them what I'd done, he wasn't in the office that day. And the casting director took pictures, sent them to him. He literally said, "I cannot believe this. I need to see this for myself. And I had gotten so incredibly lean.
Wow.
But what happened, and so they hired me for 4 videos after that because of the change in my body and how great I looked. Because when you're on camera and you're that lean and ripped, it looks stunning.
It looks better. Yeah.
Yeah, it looks much, much better. But, you know, just know yourself as much as possible. You know, be grounded. Don't get lured in by people making all these promises. And don't ever sign with an agent, because almost all the porn agents, except for a small handful, are charlatans. And make you promises and force you to sleep with them and never get you work. So just approach the studios directly.
Wow. Do you think it made your dating life, how does your dating life differ pre-porn and then post-porn?
I can say what was different about it was that because I became gamous, I was in all of the gay magazines across the country and a lot across the world, like the mainstream gay publications, not just gay porn publications.
Right.
And also because I was promoting myself as a musician and a singer. Yeah. So because of that, it was kind of bundled together with my music career taking off very rapidly. So it was an interesting experience that I was dating somebody for 4 months, and it was only after we broke up that I came to find out that days after we started dating that he ran around the gym saying, oh, you know who I'm dating?
What?
Yeah. And I never knew that because I didn't peg him as somebody who's kind of...
like a groupie?
Star fuckery. Yeah. I was a little scared, to be honest with you, when I started. I thought, like, part of me after that first shoot that I did, I came back from California. They flew me back and I was like, what did I just do? Oh my God, I can't believe that just happened. Like, it was... I felt the earth move... as a person, as like my entire life has shifted because of this, and it will never go away. Now I've done this,
right?
You know? But I embraced that quickly and started doing some more. but because I saw a means to an end with the entire thing, right. And in doing it that way, the guys who I dated understood why I was doing it. I think it would be very different from dating most porn stars that. You look at them and you say, okay, well, why are you doing this? Is it because you need the money? But there's no money in it anymore. At least there was back then. So what is your purpose for doing this? Do you have a bad self-esteem? Do you just need that attention?
Right.
Or do you really love it? And some guys really love doing the shoot days.
Wow.
You know? But most guys love the attention that they get. And that's the thing that I was not expecting, was that my porn stardom rose very rapidly.
Okay.
And in doing so... I started getting recognized all over the place. You know, I was walking down 8th Avenue in Chelsea and a whole group of guys sitting at the table in the window turned and started waving at me and smiling. And I was the typical, you know, naive person that I was like, I looked behind myself like, who's there? You know, who are they waving at? And I was like, oh, it's me. And then, of course, the first thing that comes to your mind is like, do I have a booger on my face?
Oh
my God, I must have some sort of booger on my face. And you become very self-conscious because people are staring at you and you're like, oh my gosh, I wasn't expecting this. So, but no, you know, it's interesting. Some of the guys who do porn, who've become big porn stars in the more recent years, and some of them who I've met, some of these guys have grown their ego because of the attention that they get.
Okay.
And I think that as a human being is actually a big problem. I think that, you know, this will not last forever.
Right.
Unless you parlay this into something else. And I've seen very few guys do what I was able to accomplish by taking the press and the attention and shifting it toward another kind of career.
Using it as a stepping stone.
Yeah. That's the smartest thing to do if you're going to do porn, I think, in my opinion.
It's almost like...
because it's not hot. So, you know, why do it otherwise?
Right. I feel like it's almost like the story of the girl stripping to get her way through college, almost. Like using it as a stepping stone to get to where you really want to be.
Yeah. If you can do that, and, you know, it is an access, you know, like for a lot of women across the country, they'll be able to go to a titty bar and strip there and make really good money, actually.
Really?
And put themselves through school and, you know, doing the lap dances and everything.
Oh. I could do the titty thing, but I can't do the lap dance thing.
You might be surprised.
I might be a little bit too heavy. Oh.
No, people like the badonkadonk.
Listen, I have a strip club idea called Chubwubs. So it's for us chubby ladies.
I love it.
We just got to make sure the poles are reinforced really well. That's the only downfall.
That's wrong.
Is that we don't fall.
No.
But thanks for joining me, Fred. I really appreciate you coming to, you know, open up about your past and speak about some of your experiences.
Well, you're so welcome. Thank you for having me.
Oh, man. All right. So the takeaway for today's episode is, would you or have you ever considered having a career in the adult entertainment industry? Write to me and let me know. PS I'm Single on Instagram and Twitter. Thank you.